You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
That's a wonderful ball. De Bruyne in and Sterling couldn't miss. Manchester City, like a training ground exercise, scything through the Marseille back line. And they're home and host.
3-0 over Marseille for Manchester City. Torres, Gundogan, and Sterling. Ruben Dias and Laporte solid at the back for them. Hey, this is a band called Sons of Tracy. They're pretty cool. McAllen, Texas. Song's called Beneath the Riverbed. Who says there's not good rock bands coming out these days? There are. They just don't get the airplay. These guys are good. All right, so welcome back here. A couple of things I want to tell you. Here's a really interesting story about a former Dynamo player. You do remember Zach Steinberger. He was one of the draft choices of Owen Coyle. He is a part of the Tampa Bay Rowdies now in the USL. I changed a couple texts with him, and they're going to play now, the Tampa Bay Rowdies, for the USL Championship at Al Lang Stadium in Tampa on Sunday. That game's on ESPN, 7:30 Central Time. I'll tell you a great story about him. Great young man. He scored one of the goals, by the way, in the Rowdies 2-1 semifinal victory over Louisville. They will play the Phoenix Rising to be the USL champions. He came out to a cancer clinic we were doing out in the Woodlands at the time with the Texas Rush, who I guess are no longer around. But he helped us with this clinic. He was absolutely exceptional, addressed the kids, worked with the kids. Can't say enough about him. So it was really nice to see that he's been a big part of getting this team to the USL Championship with the Tampa Bay Rowdies. So again, that game is Sunday night, 7:30 Central Time. I'm going to be watching Zach and the Rowdies take on Phoenix Rising. And the USL has been pretty remarkable. You just think about these markets that they're in and how they become the pro team in that market. And we had Ron Patel on of RGV last week. The RGV won their last two games of the year and got their first two wins of the year. It was a tough season. With COVID, players were not able to travel back and forth. There's always the conflict, I think, down there between, the guys that are there all week long training, and then all of a sudden two or three guys come in who need minutes from the big team, and they immediately, in a lot of cases, step into the lineup. So that's one more year to go between the Dynamo and RGV. We'll see where that goes in the future. And if it comes back to Houston or if the relationship continues potentially. From a player development standpoint, you've heard me over the years on here just say, it needs to all be under one umbrella in Houston. That's how you're serious about player development. Everybody can monitor everybody. There's all this wonderful crossover. There's all this organic stuff between the academy, between the USL team, between the pro team. Tab Ramos and his staff can walk over and watch training sessions and watch and monitor these players even more. But I don't know where it's going to go. I mean, only the Dynamo and RGV know where it's going to go. Ron Patel just said, it's a good relationship. We're going to carry it through the next year. Now, if RGV really wanted to be a Rio Grande Valley team, they may want to separate from the Dynamo. I don't know. The same group that Ron Patel heads up, I think it's Golden Grape Entertainment. They also run the NBA version for the Rockets. Now, player development's very different with the NBA and soccer. So I think we could go into a lot of discussion there. By the way, I put something out on Twitter about consequence. And simply I just said, I am not a big fan of Major League Soccer's amount of teams that make the playoffs. This has nothing to do with the Dynamo. It has nothing to do with any teams in the league. I just think there has to be a few more mechanisms from a competitive standpoint that are built in to, give more consequence and bring more consequence to regular season games if you're not getting results. And one of that is just less playoff spots. But I understand the theory. It's keep everybody engaged till the end. On the other hand, it allows everybody to say they're in the playoff hunt every year, up until the moment of truth, pretty much. I don't think anybody's going to be mathematically out of this until there's 2 weeks left. And, you know, at the end of the day, this can then be positioned as, hey, we're doing really well and we're close and all that stuff. And you know, soccer fans aren't silly. They're not stupid. I mean, they get it. So, you know, I think that's something to consider in the future, because I think you get better games when there is more consequence. You have owners then that are going to probably move their positions when it comes to maybe spending more on players. You'll have players in a locker room telling their buddy who's trying to get a bit of a rest before the playoffs, hey, you got to play because we got to get into the playoffs. I also would be a big fan of having a big prize money, a big prize in dollars on the supporter shield. Now, I know that can't necessarily happen because it can never become bigger than the playoffs, but we have to reward consistency in that as well. That's another way to get players pushing and more urgency to play well and win the supporter shield, as opposed to, hey, let's just make the playoffs and then hopefully make a run. There's lots of ways of looking at it. And I'll tell you what, a lot of people have a very differing opinion of mine, and that's fine. And they like the fact that they're in it the whole way through. It's just different. It's all good. All right, Kevin Baxter, LA Times, coming back in a second here. And I'll tell you what, really, really interesting, because Chicharito Hernandez has been getting criticized by Jared Borghetti for not being as professional as he should and not taking care of the game of soccer that's taking care of him. Javier Aguirre has come out, and Aguirre has, you know, he's basically said, you know, that I think the best is yet to come for Javier. You know, he will always get goals off the bench or on the field. He'll always give you goals. He has a natural gift for that. Well, Aguirre is apparently being potentially the next coach of the LA Galaxy, replacing Guillermo Barros-Schelotto. That is a rumor that is out there. Borghetti said Javier has to remember that soccer is what got him to where he is, and he has to replace that. Chicharito is doing a reality YouTube show with his wife called Naked Humans. And I'll tell you what, you go look at that, and that does not look like a guy who's concerned about his soccer career making $6 million a year. I'm sorry. He does not look professional at all. We'll take a break. LA Times, Kevin Baxter coming up next. That will be brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Hugh O'Connor's on I-10, and also our good friends at Loose Style Vermouth, and Nebo Bandovic and NB Elite Realty.
ESPN 97.5.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters as we roll on here. A big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. The Daspit Law Firm is our presenting sponsor, do a wonderful job here getting us on the air. They'll work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. They are personal injury attorneys. A big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Also, a programming note, 2:30 Saturday, we will have presented by Soccer Matters and Danish Inspirations Contemporary Furniture, the English language radio call. Eddie Robinson and I will have the call. We will do a half hour post-game show as well. So kickoff 2:30, it's on 92.5. Streaming at ESPN975.com as well, and we will do a post-game call-in show. So that's some exciting news presented by Soccer Matters and Danish Inspirations Contemporary Furniture. Out to the West Coast we go, and he is Kevin Baxter of the LA Times. Kevin, thank you very much for coming on the program.
Thanks for the invite. I was just in your neighborhood a couple of weeks ago doing some political reporting on the election, and I appreciate you taking time to step out of the early voting line and call me. Everything we've seen is everyone in Texas is standing in the voting line. So I appreciate you calling me.
I got it done 7 days ago, and I went to a Hampton Inn, free plug for Hampton, but I went to a Hampton Inn. There was nobody in there. So it was beautiful. It was two blocks from where I live. So perfect.
Way to be Hampton, and you're supporting the process. Good job.
Listen, it's the right you have. You got to vote. All right. Let's get into some LA Galaxy first and this whole dance with Chicharito, and I know you've written extensively about it. I first want to go to the fact that he didn't play in the Clasico on Sunday. You know, what's going on there? Is this proposed transfer to Chivas happening? Was he injured? Was he not injured? Only you know.
No, actually, I have no idea. The team has been very tight-lipped about this. Here's what I do know. He hasn't played in there's been four classic or traficos this year. He hasn't played in any of them. So that's kind of weird. The Galaxy have only won one of the 11 games that he's played in this season, whether it was starting or coming off the bench. And that was a week ago. As far as the transfer goes, here's my thoughts on that. He didn't play in this game because he had a what was reported to be a hamstring injury. Here's why that sounds a little bit fishy, is he supposedly hurt the hamstring on Thursday and was held out of training Thursday and Friday. We did media availability with the team and the coaching staff on Friday. No mention was made of Chicharito having any kind of a hamstring issue. And then he doesn't show up on Sunday, and all of a sudden it's a hamstring issue. Now, he had been benched for the last two games, taken out of one game and then held on the bench and came in as a sub in the second game. So he's kind of in the doghouse anyways. Whether or not he has a hamstring injury, I don't know. That's what they're telling us. But as far as the transfer to Chivas, I'm not feeling that because it's based on a lot of rumors that are untrue. One is that Chicharito is acting like a diva in the dressing room and is not speaking to any other players with the exception of his Mexican teammate, Jonathan Dos Santos. Other players say that's absolutely incorrect, that they love him as a teammate, that he's great, that he's personable. Another part of that is the Galaxy spent a club record $10 million for the transfer fee, and they're paying Chicharito $6 million a year for 3 years. This has been a bizarre season. He's had the pregnancy with his wife. He had the allegedly there's an injury. He did have an injury during the MLS's back tournament, and we've had COVID. I think this is a unusual year to say we're going to give up on the player because he didn't produce this season. The Galaxy paid a lot of money for him because they think he's still good. I don't think they sent him to Chivas just yet. I don't think he's done. Now, if he struggles at the beginning of next season, that changes. The other part of the Chivas thing, let me add it real quickly. Javier's grandfather died this season. His family is very close. I talked to him when he was in Manchester. I went to visit him there, and his whole family was there. His mom and dad, his sister, everybody was there. The family is very close. Chicharito just had his second child. He really wants to be around family after losing his grandfather. That's where I see the Chivas thing might have some legs. Chicharito demanding to go home. I don't think it's coming from the Galaxy, though. I don't think the Galaxy are going to pull the plug on that, on him this quickly.
Kevin Baxter, LA Times. Was he the right fit for this team tactically? Because this is a man that obviously needs a wide game. He needs delivery. His ability is mobility and movement in a penalty area, meeting the point of a cross and delivery. He's not going to pick a ball up and run through seven people and score a goal. Does he have the support system in your opinion?
That's a really good point because it's come up with the team this year. Sebastian Lletget talked about last year, all they had to do was throw the ball forward for Zlatan. He would find it and do something with it. Chicharito is different. Chicharito doesn't take the high ball like Zlatan did. He needs the ball on the ground. He needs it placed in a pretty good spot. Chicharito is a poacher. He hangs around in the box. You know, Zlatan was everywhere, as we know. Scored a lot of goals from outside the box. Chicharito needs a direct service right into the box. Now, he worked great with the Mexican national team in a 4-3-3, but he doesn't have Raul Jimenez and Chucky Lozano next to him with the Galaxy. And they're still trying to play that 4-3-3 and even sometimes use him as a target striker up front alone. That is not his game. I think right now with the Galaxy, he needs to play off another forward. It needs to be more of a 4-4-2. Very simple, two forwards up top. If the Galaxy can get him some support, I think he'll be more successful. But right now, it's two things. He looks completely lost, and he also looks like he's not fit.
Yeah, so let's talk about the fitness, because that's an obvious one that everybody's going to. He does not look like an athlete. He does look overweight. So what someone says right away when they see that is how serious is he taking the LA Galaxy and MLS? How serious is he taking LA Galaxy and the MLS?
Well, you'll notice I said fit. I personally, with my physique, I'm not going to accuse anyone of being overweight. But I will say he doesn't look like a fit soccer player. He doesn't look like the Chicharito of the past. And the one reason this has got become a big issue here is if you may remember when he came to the Galaxy, there was a YouTube video that was leaked of him on the phone crying, speaking to his father in Spanish and saying, "Our experiment is over. My career is done," meaning that he was coming back from Europe and he felt like he had been a failure. So a lot of people worried from that moment forward, would he be dedicated to the MLS? Now, he's said all the right things. He's made all the right pledges. But a lot of times it's not what people say. It's what they do. And he does look like he's not fit. He's never really looked in shape all season. Yes, there was the the injury to his calf. He couldn't, you know, he couldn't do a lot of fitness work then. He was preoccupied with his wife who was having, you know, who was pregnant, and he wanted to be home for that. So there were a lot of issues there. But the big question is, you know, is he dedicated? Is he in this for the right reasons, or is he just here to make some money on his way back to Mexico?
Talking to Kevin Baxter, LA Times, we're talking about Chicharito. All right, so, you know, the last good football that he played for me really was at Bayer Leverkusen, and he was an absolute star there. They loved him there. Coming here, he's obviously going to get compared to Beckham with the high-profile signing, Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Do you get a lot of that out there, that he's not living up to the quote-unquote LA Galaxy DP star performance?
Oh, absolutely. And you know what I have to say? With everyone dumping on the Galaxy for the Chicharito thing, I was a big supporter of Chicharito coming here. I still am. I still think it could work out.
Yeah.
I thought he fit the full profile perfectly. A good-looking, bilingual Mexican player in a market with 6 million Mexican and Mexican-Americans, the all-time leading scorer of the Mexican national team. The Mexican national team by far, forget the Dodgers, Lakers, all that, the Mexican national team by far is the most popular team in Southern California. And here comes their poster boy, their big star, to counter what LAFC has done with Carlos Vela. It seemed like a perfect pairing. A couple things didn't happen, though. One is he didn't perform on the field. He hasn't been on the field. And it's been a terrible season for the Galaxy, as we know. 1-7-2 in their last 9 games, the last 10 games. You know, who knows if they've won one of their last 9. So, and, you know, who knows if they'll make the playoffs. So that's been bad. But the other thing is, and I don't understand this, the Galaxy have not done anything with Chicharito from a marketing perspective. He's not out there opening supermarkets. He's not out there kissing babies. He did a little bit of TV when he first got here, certainly nothing like Zlatan. And I understand their personalities are different, but somebody should have told Chicharito, look, you're coming here and you're not going to Sporting Kansas City, or you're not going to Chicago, or you're not going to Minneapolis, because we have 6 million Mexicans and Mexican Americans here. We need you to be out there selling the brand and selling the shirt. I've seen none of that. And I don't understand. I understand bringing in a good player, but I don't understand when you have a marketable person like Chicharito and the league is struggling, why he's not out there every day. We should be as tired of Chicharito on TV as we are some of these political ads.
It is surprising. There's no question, but I've seen that around Major League Soccer before, that, you know, you think about these big investments, Kevin, and you say, how do I get the most value out of my investment? And that's part of it. It's shaking hands, kissing babies, personal contact with these guys as much as you can possibly get. And I would think that has to be agreed upon if you're going to pay somebody, what did you say it is, 10 million a year, 8 million a year, 6 million a year.
Yeah.
6 million a year. You better get out in the public a little bit.
Well, let me say, when Vela came here at the very beginning with LAFC, at the very, very beginning, he talked a lot. And some of the Mexican reporters that are stationed here said, you didn't speak in Mexico, you know, you didn't speak to the national team reporters, why are you speaking now? And he said, that's part of what they told me I had to do when I came to MLS. Now, I'll say, since then, he's completely shut up. Last year, greatest season in MLS history, I think, arguably an MVP season. He spoke to me, the LA Times, we're the major media outlet that covers the team. He spoke to me one-on-one for 8 minutes all season. I haven't got even that much with Chicharito this year. And I'm not saying he needs to speak to the LA Times. He can speak to whoever he wants. But I am saying that if you're going to bring these guys in for this much money to market the team, you would think that they'd spend a little bit of time. They don't have to necessarily drive to every supermarket that's opening. They can do an interview with a major outlet, and they can talk about their babies or the struggles of being away from home, or you know, in Chicharito's case, why, you know, how difficult has this season been for him, and maybe get a little bit of sympathy or at least attention for the team. And they've done none of that. I think instead, unless they have good news to talk about, they don't want to talk. And you know, I just think that's a mistake. They have a story to tell, and they have some responsibility. I think they have, you know, to stand up and explain things, and they haven't done that. And I think if they did, I think they'd be looked upon more favorably.
Oh, you know, 100%. I don't understand the mystery sometimes around Major League Soccer and people not talking about these things, because this creates transparency, it creates trust, humanizes people. It just makes it so much better. I don't get it. So LeBron James is out there and some of the other LA star athletes, but you have a hard time getting the star MLS players, is what I'm hearing here.
Well, one of the things I've tried to tell MLS, and they're so into protecting the brand, that anything that might sound negative isn't necessarily negative, but it might sound negative. They don't want that. And my take is, if you don't talk about the team when it's down, you can't understand how great it was when it comes back. You know what I mean? If a team finishes last one year and they get no coverage and they finish first the next year, we can't follow that journey because we never got access when they were struggling. And so one of the problems I've had with MLS, I've had the fortune of covering Major League Baseball for a number of years, for more than a decade, and doing some other things with college football and the NFL and NBA. And my point is, I can walk into, or I could before COVID, but still, I can go to the Angels and I can get Mike Trout one-on-one for as long as I want. Our Laker writer, Tanya Ganguly, she gets LeBron James all the time, does a great job with that. And so that's in our paper and on our website. Interview with LeBron James, Mike Trout explaining his difficult year with the Angels, Clayton Kershaw talking about his playoff issues. That's all there. And then you pick up the LAFC story, and there's no Carlos Vela talking about his injury. There's no Chicharito explaining his problems. We get the third string backup water boy. I mean, that's our access. And I think readers look at that and say, does MLS not take themselves seriously? Do the writers not take them seriously? What's the disconnect here? Why can I hear from LeBron James, but I can't hear from Sebastian Legette?
And I think fans are beginning to really kind of get tired of, we're only going to publicize the positive things and not talk about, like you said, the story, the reference points of disappointment. I mean, this is a part of life. Why wouldn't we make that a part of our league? I mean, people win and lose. This is what competition is. So I'm with you 100%. How much pressure, Chris Klein, Dennis DeClos, how much pressure are they under? And maybe even Dan Beckerman of AEG, because during the Classico broadcast, they showed a shot of him in the stands.
Well, here's where we are with those guys. When Bruce Arena left after the 2016 season, since then, the team has lost more games. And remember, this is a 22 game season now that's not even finished yet. Yeah. But despite that, the last 4 years, the Galaxy have lost more games than they've lost in any 4 year period in their history. They've gone the longest between MLS Cup appearances in their history. They finished last in 2017. They're in last place now. They had never finished last before. The point is, it's been really dismal here for the last 4 years. And that's since Bruce Arena left and Chris Klein and Dan Beckerman really took over. So there is a lot of heat on them. They fired, they've made some front office firings in the past. They use scapegoats. They've gone through four coaches now in four seasons. So there have been scapegoats and there have been people that lost their jobs. But Klein and Beckerman, the two guys in charge, have kept theirs. In fact, Chris Klein got, after the 2017 season, got a five-year contract extension. I think the time, all the scapegoats are gone. Now, I don't think Guillermo Barros-Coloto comes back next season. I think he will be fired. I think Dennis stays. Dennis DeClos, I think his reputation is pretty good. I don't know that
he hired Barros-Coloto.
Right. And signed Chicharito. But we don't know how much of an impact Dan Beckerman had on that. It was interesting. The old coaching staff told me that Steven Gerrard, Giovanni Dos Santos, those were players that the coaching staff did not want. The Bruce Arena staff did not want those players, didn't think they fit in. Dan Beckerman forced them on the team because of the marketing possibilities. Sure. So the fan base is very upset. We've seen fans standing outside the stadium. They can't come in, of course. They're standing outside the stadium with signs that say Klein out, and that's now a trending on Twitter out here as well. So Chris Klein is definitely on the hot seat. It's going to be interesting. He and Dan Beckerman have sort of been the brain trust behind all of this. Now that they've run out of scapegoats, are they going to turn on one another? Or are we going to hear, is Beckerman going to fire Klein? Is Klein going to accuse Beckerman of engineering a lot of these bad moves? That's the kind of pressure they're under now.
And what about Guillermo Barros-Coloto? I mean, come on, this guy, Boca Juniors, did some remarkable things. Has he been supported properly, you think? And again, with some of these signings, which it sounds like are not choices he's going to make.
Well, he did get guys that we understand that he wanted. Maybe it was more Dennis, like Pipo Gonzalez, mm-hmm. the Costa Rican World Cup center back. He's been a disaster. They weren't able to keep Antuna after last season. They wanted Pavon. They got him. For the most part, it sounds like he's gotten the players he wanted. Now, Chicharito may be the one where they said, I know this doesn't fit what you're trying to do, but, you know, from the marketing and everything else, we got to bring this guy in. I think for the most part, he's gotten the players he wanted. The problem is they don't fit together. These players don't fit together, and I have been totally unimpressed with Guillermo's ability to make tactical changes in a game. The Galaxy come out, and they have a game plan, And if that doesn't work, if the opponent does something that they didn't expect, there's no change. Do you know the Galaxy have only gotten one goal from a player off the bench this season? That was their last game, their last win, when they got a goal in stoppage time off a substitute. So Guillermo's not making the in-game changes that need to be made strategically. The Galaxy don't seem to have a personality, a culture, and they certainly don't seem to have a playing style.
Does Guillermo seem beaten down? I mean, does he look like he's fighting, or does he seem beaten down, him and his brother? Because they look pretty stoic and pretty, you know, when you see these images on the bench, I don't know. What is your perspective, Kevin?
Well, they seem really down during the MLS's back tournament. That was when the Galaxy got off to that the worst start in franchise history, didn't win any of their first four games. They kind of got a little bit of a giddy up in their step when they had that four-game winning streak after that. But, yeah, since then, it's kind of been a deer in the headlights thing. It's like they don't have any answers. And here's one – you mentioned the coaching staff. Guillermo's twin brother is his top assistant. There's another assistant he brought from Argentina. His goalkeeper coach came with him from Boca Juniors, as did Javier Valdecantos, his performance coach. So the point is, if they were to let Guillermo go, there would be no coaching staff left. You know, even if they were offered the interim job to Dominic Kinnear, I'm not sure he would take it since he's
And where does Dominic Kinnear fit in? Does he have a lot of input? He
doesn't seem to. He seems like he's basically the translator among the coaching staff. And and when the Galaxy fired Ziggy Schmidt a couple of years ago and Dominic Kinnear was the interim coach, he almost took them to the playoffs. He did a great job and was not seriously considered for the top job. That's why I'm not sure he would take the interim job now. And I talked to one team official, a very high-ranking team official off the record, and he said, you know, there has to be some accountability right now. He was talking about Guillermo, whether Guillermo will be fired. And he said there has to be some accountability, which I took to meant that, yes, they're seriously considering that. But then this guy said, but, you know, we're at the end of the season. If we bring in a coach from overseas or even perhaps out of state, he might have to quarantine for 10 to 12 days. He's not going to be able to coach any games. It's much better for us to ride this out and wait until after the season, see who becomes available, bring them in, have them quarantine for the 14 days, and then start next season, 0-0, as opposed to bring somebody in now and have to replace an entire coaching staff because, it would be Dominic by himself if Guillermo were fired. So I don't think they're happy with this. I think they want to change the direction, but I think they're being forced to be a little more patient than they might be normally.
He's Kevin Baxter of the LA Times. Before we let you go, let's get a word on LAFC. Obviously, they're trending upward. They're getting some people healthy, including Carlos Vela, who plays in the Clasico, scores a goal in it. Do you like the way they're approaching the playoffs this year as opposed to before? They've strengthened things at the back a little bit with Murillo. Maybe they're on the upward trend here now.
Well, it's funny because when you watch them, they're just a shadow of the team they were last year. They don't look the same. Yesterday against the Galaxy, they had 27 shots, and they only got two goals, and one was in stoppage time. That second goal came from Carlos Vela. So you're right. They may not pass the eyeball test, but when you look at the numbers, they're 3-1-1 and 10 points in their last of their available 15 in their last five games. 3-1-1. They're the third hottest team in the league. They've given minutes this year to 30 different players. A lot of young kids. They had one point in a recent game, they had four teenagers on the field. But now Rossi's back from international duty. Brian Rodriguez is back. Vela is back. He's healthy now. Mark Anthony Kay is almost ready to come back. In their last seven games, they've given up only – you talk about the defense. In their last seven games, they've given up only seven goals. They had two shutouts. They're first in the league in scoring. And now, as you said, they fixed that defense. A big part of that is Pablo Cisniega in goal. So they are definitely trending in the right direction. Don't look at their season record when you get to the playoffs. I think they may have the most momentum. They in Philadelphia going into the playoffs. I think they can make a long run because they're getting healthy. And the other part of this is everyone's dealt with these three games a week and all that kind of stuff. Not Carlos Vela. He's been on the sidelines watching. He's going to be fresh.
Yeah, no question about it. Great stuff from Kevin Baxter of the LA Times. Kevin, as always, thank you for the great thorough analysis, but also good to get it from you on the ground out there and really get a sense and feel of what's going on. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
All right, that's Kevin Baxter. Great stuff from him there. Before we go to break, real estate agents, you're tired of paying high commission splits to brokers? Envy Elite Realty. You'll get 100% of your hard-earned commission, free investment, exceptional support, no hidden fees, nbelitereality.com or 844-444-NBER. That's nbelitereality.com.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5.
I'm Jordi Sunyer in Barcelona, and you're listening to Soccer Matters.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. A big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. They are our presenting sponsors. They get this program on the air. So a big thank you to John and his firm. They're personal injury attorneys. You get in an accident, motorcycle, 18-wheeler, Daspit Law Firm is going to have you covered. 713-322-HURT. That's 713-322-HURT, DaspitLaw.com. By the way, Saturday, 2:30 to 5, we will have Soccer Matters and Danish Inspirations Contemporary Furniture presenting on the radio in English language. Glenn Davis, Eddie Robinson. We will have the call of the Houston Dynamo FC Dallas match, plus a 30-minute post-game show. So be ready for that. But right now, something even bigger. We go over to Barcelona, Spain. Our great friend from TV3, Jordi Sunyer, joins us now. Jordi, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Thanks for having me again on the show.
Well, Jordi, come on. You know, when there's a Clásico, we got to go right to Jordi Sunyer, and that's what we're going to do. First, tell me how big this is for Real Madrid and Zinedine Zidane, off the fact that they had lost to Shakhtar Donetsk in the Champions League, Cadiz in La Liga.
It's not that big, I would say, but they have saved the complicated situation because, as you said, they lost against Cadiz, a newly promoted team, last week, 1-0. They lost against depleted Shakhtar Donetsk team with many players staying in Ukraine because of the COVID. So situation was getting worse for Zinedine Zidane. There were talks of dismissal for the French coach of Real Madrid. And again, he saved this situation. And for the first time in 12 years, Real Madrid managed to win two Clásicos in a row, because you remember they won 2-0 in the last Clásico before the pandemic, and they won 1-3 this time. But last months, there have been these talks in Madrid about Zinedine Zidane's continuity. The fact is, these two Clásicos, Madrid, they haven't shown a spectacular kind of football. They haven't played gorgeous football. That's what makes Barcelona's situation more worrying, because the sensation is, for Barcelona fans, we have lost two games clearly against Real Madrid, in which they were not that better to beat us by a global score of 5-1. So I don't think it's so big to win this Clásico, but it lifts up the mood in Madrid for Zinedine Zidane and the team.
Jordi Sunyer joining us from TV3. Real Madrid gets goals from Federico Valverde, Sergio Ramos, Luka Modric. Valverde getting one 5 minutes in. Ansu Fati for Barcelona. Okay, so what's the big storyline out of this one for Barcelona? Is we know nothing is accepted, no matter what's going on, and the resources not being maybe where they want them, the challenges Ronald Koeman has. What are the big storylines out of this 3-1 loss to Real Madrid for Barcelona?
Well, we're getting right now in a situation like Back to the Future, you know, the movie, because we are kind of getting back to the 80s when Barcelona, every time they lost a Clásico, it was the referee's fault. And even with VAR, that's the referee's fault again. That's the line here in Barcelona. Even there's a sports newspaper here in Barcelona, Sport. They have sent a journalist to Benidorm, which is the town where the referee of that match was born, Martinez Munuera. Yeah, in order to find if he really was a Real Madrid supporter, because it's known that Martinez Munuera's father was the founder of a Real Madrid fans group in Benidorm. And this has been, you may not believe it, but it's true, this has been front page today in sport newspaper here in Barcelona. That's absolutely ridiculous. That's the storyline, because of a play in the 62nd minute of the game, that penalty that Sergio Ramos converted into the 2-1. Lenglet really pulls Sergio Ramos' shirt, but Sergio Ramos pushes also Lenglet in this play. So I think it's a normal situation in a penalty area before any corner kick, any a situation with a dead ball.
So you don't think it was a penalty?
The thing is, if you only look at Lenglet pulling the shirt of Sergio Ramos, it's a clear penalty. There's no doubt, because even we can say, if I can use this word, that Lenglet is a little bit dumb, because in a Clásico, there are 40 cameras. There's the VAR. If you know that you're playing against Real Madrid, you have to know that you must not pull Real Madrid's player's shirt in the area, because you're likely to get a penalty against your team. So the shirt pulling, it existed. That's a clear penalty. But before that, Ramos pushed Lenglet, and this afternoon we have discovered an audio which can be heard in the audio of the TV broadcasting. The linesman, the assistant referee, is saying to Martinez Munuera, there's a fall by Sergio Ramos before Lenglet's penalty. And there will be more controversy in the next hours to come, in the next days to come. And that gets an ironic situation, because Ronald Koeman is, in this aspect, becoming a little bit like Jose Mourinho. You know, every time Jose Mourinho lost a game, he tried to divert the attention, speaking about referees or whatever thing.
Lack of accountability.
He knew how to play. He knew every trick in the book to divert the attention and make the media and the fans speak about other things, not about their players and the game they play. So Ronald Koeman, the first answer before the game, was complaining about that penalty, complaining about the referee. In Barcelona, that's a very 80s style, when Barcelona was such a big club but didn't win anything. That was forgotten in Pep Guardiola's era. Pep Guardiola always said, we have to fight against everything. And we may know that referees are biased against us, that may be likely, but we have to cope with that. We have to do it very well to win, and they did. And now Barcelona not playing that well, and they are complaining about referees again, like they did in the 80s, in the 90s, before Johan Cruyff, before Guardiola. So that's a very ironic situation here in Barcelona.
Jordi Sunyer, TB3, joining us. But if they're going that route and they're going to continue to blame things and not take accountability, does that scare you a little bit about the direction maybe this is going? Because we all know that teams don't take responsibility for their own actions in football matches are ones that generally, they're weak. They ultimately have a weakness.
Well, the thing is, we could say that both teams playing in the Clásico, Barcelona and Real Madrid, are teams under construction, I might say. But Real Madrid is under construction after winning the La Liga title last year. Barcelona didn't win anything. The club is in a difficult situation. The team is in a difficult situation. It's normal that if you are rebuilding the team, there are flaws in the team. And there are tactical issues even that Ronald Koeman has to solve, and he has this responsibility. For example, Ronald Koeman was brave choosing young players such as Pedri or Ansu Fati or American Serginho Dest in the starting 11. But, for example, everyone praised Ronald Koeman for starting Pedri, but he used Pedri as a winger. And Pedri is not a winger. He's a number 10, an enganche, as we could say in Spanish. So you play in the starting 11, a 17-year-old guy in the Clásico, out of his position.
In front of a 20-year-old. The two youngest guys in your team are on the same side of the field.
Yeah, exactly. But I think, Serginho Dest has played in the Eredivisie, has been a U.S. soccer national team player. So he's young, but has some experience. Pedri played last year for Las Palmas in Spanish second division. He can be a great player. He showed things that build the hopes of Barcelona fans. But it was his third or fourth match with Barcelona. I think it was brave by Koeman, but it was a risk playing him and out of position. Another thing, with 2-1 in the scoreboard, Koeman made his first changes in the 80th minute of the game, 20 minutes after Sergio Ramos converted the penalty. And the great Barcelona of Pep Guardiola, and I would say even with other coaches, won the games thanks to the midfield. And he took off Sergio Busquets. So he divided the team because he played with so many players up front. Griezmann, Dembélé left the defenders, and there was no players to make the transition in the midfield. So he wanted to solve the situation, but the result was even worse because Real Madrid got 1-3. So Barcelona's rebuilding, but I think also Ronald Koeman has to think about some of his choices in the game. Many things to solve and to look at in Barcelona.
All right, we got 3 minutes with you, Jordi. So two more quick questions. Give me a minute on Sergiño Dest and his performance, as U.S. fans were interested in seeing him get a first ever start as an American in a Clásico like this.
Sensations or opinions here in Barcelona about Sergiño Dest are good. He had to play as a left back in last game. He did quite well. He played in his normal position, I would say, right back against Real Madrid. There's only one thing that can worry the fan. It's the fact that even heat maps show that Sergiño Dest, as you know, is a very offensive right back. He spends more time in the opponent's half of the pitch than in his own half. So he has to solve a little bit, has to improve defensively. But
Was that a little bit because he had Pedri in front of him and maybe he was being a little bit more conservative?
No. He showed he was an offensive keys, an offensive right back, because Pedri was used as a winger. But because he's not a winger, he had the idea always of going to the center of the field. So he left the space for Dest going to that space in the right wing. So no problem for that. You know, Sergiño Dest resembles Dani Alves in many things, and he says that Dani Alves is one of his favorite players, one of his icons. But to play like Dani Alves, Barcelona has to play like Barcelona played when Dani Alves was in the team. And I think that's not the situation right now. So we have to see how Sergiño adapts to this 4-2-3-1 that Ronald Koeman's playing and the variations he's doing in Barcelona tactics. It's still very soon. We have to see how he adapts, but I think he can be a great player for Barcelona and for years to come, as he's so young.
Jordi Sunyer, TV3 in Barcelona. All right, we can't let you go without getting a word on Lionel Messi, his performance, what the fans think, what Messi has come out and said.
You know that Messi hasn't scored still in open play. All his goals this season have come thanks to penalties. He showed some of his characteristic game against Real Madrid, had a pair of chances, but, you know, some fans are getting worried. They are kind of suspicious about everything that has happened with Lionel Messi at the beginning of the season. Asking themselves if it's really not affecting Lionel Messi's game, because he sacrificed in defense, he helped in defense, but he was maybe not as important in the attacking third as he is usually for Barcelona. We'll have to see. These are the first games of the season. There are things to solve in Barcelona, but this beginning of the season by Lionel Messi hasn't been his best. So we'll have to see.
Are we seeing him slow down, Jordi? Are we seeing Father Time catch up with Lionel Messi?
He's 33. He has always said, or not himself that much, but journalists, analysts, pundits have said always that we should see a Lionel Messi more midfielder than striker in the coming years. Maybe this is the situation for this season. It's probable. It's probable. But you know, there's no Luis Suarez. Griezmann is not playing well. Ansu Fati can play as a striker, as a number nine, but he's not a pure number nine. So if you get Messi deeper in the field, you need a striker that can take profit of his balls, of his assistances, and of his play. And maybe Barcelona hasn't got a pure number nine. Okay, they got Martin Braithwaite, but we're not speaking about a world-class striker. So, as I said, these are the first games of the season, and there are many questions still to answer about Barcelona. And maybe that's this transition from not striker, but, you know, Koeman has tried to play Messi as a false nine in the first games of the season. And against Real Madrid, he changed tactics because he played Ansu Fati as a number nine, and he made Messi play deeper as a number 10. And it wasn't his best game. So we'll have to see. We'll have to see because I think Koeman has not clear ideas. Still, he's trying some things to get the team to the kind of play, the style of play where he wants to. Let's see. It's October 26th, 27th. There are weeks to come to solve some situations.
Jordi, as always, thank you so much for coming on. It's great to get it from you right in Barcelona. We appreciate your time, as always.
Thank you very much, Glenn. It's always a pleasure chatting with you.
That's Jordi Sunyer, TV3. We're going to take an end to the night here. We appreciate Jordi coming on. What a way to end it tonight, talking the Clásico between Real Madrid and Barcelona. That update was brought to you by Lustav Vermouth. Get a little Spain in your life over ice with tonic water or club soda. Lustav Vermouth is refreshing. Comes in three different types. The Rojo, also the Rosé with a hint of vanilla, and the white, which has a hint of rosemary. Beautiful in gin and tonics. Lustav Vermouth, ask for it at your local liquor store. That's perfect when we're talking about Spanish vermouth and Spanish football with Jordi Sunyer of TV3. Twitter, Glenn Davis Soc, Facebook Soccer Matters, glenndavissoccer.com. A big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, our presenting sponsor, plus our producer, as always, Aaron Raybould, and the one and only Victor Ariza. Until next Tuesday night at 7 o'clock Central, I'm Glenn Davis. On behalf of the firm, good night.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by.